Who's benefited more from this than anybody? Well, you know, the fact that more people are watching Saturday Night Live than ever, and more people are buying the New York Times than ever, more people are buying the Washington Post than ever. And what a great position to be in for them, right? You know, the dying industry, as far as we were told, and now it's...
Right.
We can continue that beyond the point of the election cycle. And, you know, these people are only sustained by the election cycle.
That's interesting, because it's a culture in crisis can validate itself to some extent. It's the thing in Hollywood too, although, again, I wouldn't have paid attention to this if it hadn't come through some other source, but there's a lot of up-in-armsism in Hollywood right now around Trump, it seems. The Hollywood liberal set, whatever, who are sort of emboldened to somehow swept up in the false sense of importance that they can actually do something about Trump and band together and use their collective influence to bring down this terrible tyrant, whatever it is. I don't know. I'm sure you know more about it than I do, but that would be very legitimizing, right?
Yes.
To have a mission of that sort.
Would be legitimizing, which is interesting because I noticed with, I don't watch the Super Bowl, I don't do that, but I did see that there was this expectation that Lady Gaga, who performed at the Super Bowl, would make her performance about Trump somehow and take a stand. And now there's all this feedback, which is like, saying to celebrities, saying, well, you need to make a stand, you need to make a statement, you need to tell us which side you're on. And, you know, you need to be using that power, which, of course, is all it's doing is cementing the worship of celebrities, right? Like, it's not acknowledging that as a problem. It's actually saying, well, no, this is these people are...
Yeah, that's
the power,
right. This is why we need to worship them, because we'll give them the power to help us.
They have the power to help us, and they need to help us, and they will help us. And you're like, that hasn't worked out so well so far, but... it's fascinating to me that has become this thing, and they're like, well, we need, you know, then the people who have done that, or even, again, a lot of it's projection. So people will say, well, you know, I think this performance was about this, and you'll be like, well, okay, yes, but really it was just about them making more people in awe of what they're doing, so they will, you know, build their brand, buy their records, give them money, etc., build their status. It's kind of like low level analysis of it, but it's like with the what goes on around Beyonce and the idea that she's speaking for black people, and you're like, well, no, she doesn't want to just speak for black people, because there are not enough people in America that are black for her to make the kind of money she wants to make. She wants to speak for white people too, right? She's not gonna cut off like that much of her potential demographic market to only speak for them. That's probably not what her aim is, but you know, it's obviously the aim there is to convey a message that allows people to think that, right? That allows people to think she's speaking for me and not you. So you know, she's helping me, she's not helping you. So yeah, I think that's all, that seems to be a whole other layer to it, with this turning to celebrities and then the media becoming the mediator, like obviously it always has been, but people are sort of leaning on it, like what media can you trust, what media can't you trust, and you know, what's fake news, what isn't, you know. Well, and even pretty smart people, you know, saying, well, you know, we just get New York Times and the Washington Post, they'll tell you what's going on,
right?
Which is just maddening to me, but
So roughly how many people do you know, would you say, in terms of the people that you're engaging with and having discussions with, and people that you feel that you're working with or need to be working with, and so on, like your circle, and not including just your passive audience, of course.
How many people,
I
what?
know it's a bit of a strange question, but I'm just trying to get a sense of like where you're situated and what. Yeah, what you're having to deal with in terms of the work that you're involved in as a disseminator of information, plus your social life. Like, what kind of circle are we talking about, size-wise?
Oh, how many people like do I interact with on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I guess you could put it
Well, so I don't know if there's any other way I can imagine it.
that way. Yeah.
Don't know. Probably 100.
Wow.
About
So,
a guess. And
and that,
that's in real life and online and on the phone.
yeah. And what percentage of that 100, it's a convenient figure, is it work based as opposed to social?
Oh, that's difficult because the majority of people now are both for me.
Right.
If I,
Well,
because,
so yeah, so just include everyone who is work, even if it's also social.
include everyone who, oh, so what percentage is work? Oh, I
Yeah.
see. Oh, probably a good 90.
Wow. Right. So we're talking about maybe about 90 people that you're, I don't want to say beholden to, but there might be some of that in terms of you've got a shared responsibility to do stuff. Yeah, you need to agree about stuff because if there's real tension there, it's going to snarl up all the stuff you're trying to do.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Right. So,
That is true, and that's actually a big concern because felt to a certain extent I don't have the luxury.
to disagree.
No, almost, yeah, because the difficulty that it could continue, it could cause me later on, having to collaborate with people over things, rely on them for certain things, rely on their support to be able to do certain things. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I think I've spoken to you about this before. As this year goes on, I'm sure it will become even trickier for that. I'm certain of it, in that it will become a situation where, I do feel beholden to a certain group of people. I almost feel beholden to, however many people it was that gave to the campaign Kickstarter that had my book's title on it. Do you know what I mean? That's thousands of people.
That was the film project with Rosie McDonald.
No, Ricky Lake,
Ricky Lake. Oh,
but
why do
yeah,
I
same
confuse? I
difference.
confuse those two. Oh, because I sent you that email about Rosie McDonald, and you
Yeah,
probably
didn't
thought,
we?
"What's that?
Well,
Why
I
did
know
you?"
I did make the connection. I was like, oh yeah, I can see where you're going with that. But yeah, no, so do you see, like, I almost feel, because they're, they literally, like, practically supported that coming about. So yeah, no, I think, and as the time goes on, it will become more pronounced even. And obviously, that has I have dual responses to that. My one response is, okay, join the narrative, keep your head down, get on with it, get it over with, then you'll be free. And the second one is, burn all bridges, get rid of him. Just
The two extremes, then.
do it now, so that you don't feel trapped by this situation. And it sounds really overly dramatic, and it sounds, I feel sort of silly saying it, but even in the past couple of weeks, because of the conversation I had online around the Women's March situation, a couple of people came to me and they said, well, if you don't correct what you've been saying about this online, we are going to actively discourage people from supporting what you do.
Really?
Yes. And, you know, in a sense, part of me is like, well, so be it. You know, it's not like I am have such a status that that's going to make particular difference to me. But at the same time, my work that I earn money from is connected to that status, so
Right.
it would. It could have a real practical impact on my life, and change what I can do with my life, where I can live, etc. And so, you know, I think that really brought up some very uneasy feelings in me, and I responded in a very a kind of, well, I want to say aggressive, but it's not really the right word. I felt very much like I had to shut it down. I was like, no, I won't tolerate that situation. I won't tolerate that being said. I won't kowtow to it, but I won't tolerate it. And it just, yeah, I was like, oh, okay, so that's what it feels like to have your online persona, you know, no, it's not necessarily to be threatened in that way, but can have real consequences for like actually what I do every day.
Yeah. So is that not exactly an example, but it relates to what you're talking about at the beginning about in terms of being aware of a threshold that if you don't say yes, you'll never get to cross.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, it's occurring to me that not for the first time, but first time maybe when talking to somebody who's experiencing this, that in terms of how there may be many thresholds that don't appear to be thresholds, or at least they don't appear to be dangerous thresholds that one can cross that improve one's circumstances, conditions, finances, one's reach, one's influence, and so forth, that will make one less and less inclined to say no, because those favors that one wasn't aware of being granted can be then withdrawn. You see what I mean? Like you're given advantages, not you personally. One is given advantages by the culture that one is moving in order to advance, without necessarily realizing that it was dependent on keeping to a program. And then a certain point, one becomes more aware of what the program is, and if one starts to back away, then one can suddenly lose an awful lot of ground that one feels what one legitimately gained.
Yeah, and I think that in my experience of that, it's that, you know, when you start out with something that you feel quite like alone in, that it's your information that you're putting forward that majority of people find difficult to understand or don't agree with or have issues with, and then as time progresses, more and more people join your side. And they join, and you get more and more support over time, and other people start talking about it, and this all connects, and the sort of group grows bigger, and then you realize, oh, okay, so now I'm part of this, which is supposedly what I intended, right?
Right.
That was apparent, that should have been my intention, makes sense. But then once the intention it begins to be fulfilled, it's like, well, then now. Why am I not comfortable with that? Where does that put me? Why do I now want to get out of it?
Right. So, and what's the answer to that, do you think? I mean, is this a specific? Are you taking my sort of general thing as a metaphor and extending it, or are you now talking about your direct experience that you've helped to build something that you're not sure you want to be inside of?
No, it's definitely my direct experience in that, you know, obviously when you put something out there like a book or an idea or, you know, an article or something, you and initially, you know, you're in a position where you sort of feel quite on the edges, like most people don't really get it, and you're okay with that. Like I assumed that. Right. I didn't know, not know that was going to be how it would be. And now, as time's gone on, more people seem to be agreeing with me and saying, you know, well, yeah, look, so you did this. So now this other person did this. And because of you, somebody else did this. And because of you, somebody else. And I'm like, that's all great. But it's almost like these branches going out, right? And the branches go out from that. And of course, I am not going to implicitly agree with everything that's going on at the end of those branches,
Right.
or all the ideas that have been put forth on, is it, I suppose branches is better than roots, but put forth on those, right? And everybody obviously is going to extend it and evolve the idea and evolve the concepts and evolve the messages that I had myself to a different degree in different ways, and also manipulate them and use them and turn them upside down, and all these different things. And so, so you get sort of infused by that, obviously, because it feels very validating, right? It feels very like you've makes you feel really good. But at the same time, like that, it gets stretches you to, and you're like, well, I know, I sort of instinctively sense that if I were to go the route of like becoming a brand, and the getting loads of followers and being asked to make comments on TV, you can see there's a certain trajectory, right? That is, that you could see potential, that you could choose and say yes to, and you see people choose and say yes to. But then to do that, like you'd have to very magnanimously, like very generously be like, yes, this is all part of it. This is all acceptable part of it. This is all what I meant to happen.
Which wouldn't be true.
Wouldn't be true. No. And yeah, it's
But
because
you
it's
wouldn't
not.
have to, sorry, but you wouldn't have to kid yourself to that extent. You could just say, well, this isn't what I intended, but it's worth it, and the basic intention's still good, so, and it gets more attention to the issue that I
That's
do
true.
want to, so I'll, yeah, sure, I'll compromise here, there, and I mean
Yeah,
that.
that's true. But then I still have that compulsion to do or say or put something else out in the world that makes all the people who have now got behind me go, oh.
Is that why you do this podcast
Ah, that's a good question. Yeah, but still, this thing is, I'm not doing it consciously because I'm like, oh, well, that will be provocative. This is a legitimate part of what I think about every day, right? And doing this podcast with you means I get to talk to you about it, which is really the only reason I do it, right? Is because I get to talk to you about it.
Right, same. Same.
So.
But is there an element of concern or caution about being associated with me and what I do that is present in your awareness sometimes, let's say?
I think sometimes it is, and I think maybe more frequently previously, but going through the sort of airlock post-election, I feel like I've come out and I just feel I don't feel like that anymore, which is kind of what I'm saying. I'm sort of I feel sort of tired of feeling like that in a way, and just tired of feeling like, oh, policing myself and tired of it while I'm still sort of doing it. I'm not doing it. I don't feel like I'm doing it right now, or that I've been doing it for the last hour and a half. I actually don't really feel like that. Maybe I have, but in other areas, I definitely have still been doing it, to the point of, like, for example, when I got told that these people wanted to do what they said they were going to do, whatever that meant, like tell people not to support what I was doing, that I actually removed the offending stuff that they didn't like, even though it didn't really help because the cat was out of the bag by that point, right? The cat wasn't going to go back in.
What was it that was so offending? Offensive?
Just talking about how I found it quite odd that women were being told they weren't meant to refer to their own biology
Right, okay.
it publicly
That thing, yeah.
because it was triggering to other people who had were women but had penises.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I just, I don't, yeah, I just, I feel sort of ready to move on from that, but at the same time, I still feel like I'm doing clean up in areas that I shouldn't have to, and I only am doing it just almost to feel less anxious in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, there's not many people I really, you know, there's a lot of people I think, and maybe this is the image they present. Although, you know, for the most part, the time I've spent, the sort of people I'm thinking of, the time I've spent with them, I wouldn't necessarily say that there was anything different going on in real life. Is that they sort of have this myopic, almost myopic interest group or direction or way of thinking that's like, well, this is my thing, right? This is my area, this is my zone, this is what I talk about, this is what I do, this is, and I've always resisted that. I don't like that idea.
Right, yeah. It was funny because it was where I got stuck on a pause there because I was going to say something about agendas and how the extent to which what one does is part has an agenda. It then can become part of other agendas, and this is, I think, what you're describing. That's one way for me to understand it. And because a lot of your work is, it's certainly easy to convert into an agenda, even if it wasn't meant as one, as in the agenda to change the policies around birth control, let's say, or change the regulations around the pill, whatever, you know, the various ways that the kind of information you're disseminating can be acted on, and perhaps you would hope that it would be. And this is like in the, what I do, it's one of the things that I try to put forward, which is that I'm not, none of this is meant to create agendas. None of this is meant to lead to any kind of action. It's the exploration itself that has value. But I realized as I was thinking about this, just now, I mean, that that doesn't mean that I don't have an agenda in terms of just wanting people to explore it. Wanting people, like for a while now, I've wanted to bring up the organized pedophilia in Hollywood because that's the thing that I talk about, and so that's my agenda. Even though I wouldn't want to talk to you about it, in because I want to stop it, I still want people to become aware of it, and so that's also an agenda. So it's very subtle, isn't it? What becomes an agenda and what starts as an agenda and then creates more, and what starts as just a genuine curiosity or a genuine response, but very quickly becomes an agenda, you know, and the extent to which that sort of conversion of a spontaneous response into an agenda compromises us right away, you know, even before people are trying to put handles on us, we've already put a handle on ourselves and said, here, you know, if you pull that, and I will go that way, you know.
Yeah, and I like that. I think that I feel like that, that what I, everything that I do is all started from curiosity and exploring it and quite a philosophical standpoint. I don't feel like I had an agenda. Which is why it's funny when people ask me, well, they always want to draw you into that, right? They always want to say, well, what do you want to happen?
Right,
What's next? And
right.
I always am like, well,
Especially in LA, right? What's next?
I'm like, well, I always laugh and I'm like, well, you know, I don't know, like everything, basically. Like, what do I want to happen? Well, it's so big, but it's so big that it isn't really a thing. Like, it's certainly not change the law or make this happen or campaign around this issue or instigate this. But yeah, it's very easy to go down that road. And also, you know, when people, when you sort of say, well, actually, no, I don't know if that would be a good idea. They're like, well, sure, how can that not be your agenda? So it does, yeah, I think it's definitely something that gets sticky. But the funny thing is talking about agendas, I think maybe a freeing point for me was that about, I guess it was probably in December, when Trump brought in the guy who ran that Breitbart website, Steve Bannon, and he brought him in, and the media responded by posting and showing on the news a lot of headlines from Breitbart and mocking it and being like, look, this is what this guy does, this is who he is. And one of the headlines was, the pill makes you crazy. And it was this, birth control makes you crazy. Birth Control Makes Women Crazy, and it was one of maybe six or seven headlines that were passed around and around and around. And it had to, I had to laugh because I was like, okay. Yeah. And I read the piece, and of course, it had an angle to it that was all of its own and the kind of angle you'd expect. But yeah, I was like, okay. And then he hired somebody, I can't even remember her name now, somebody for his health group or whatever, who was a woman who'd written two articles for a conservative website about the side effects of the pill. And I went and read them, and I was like, oh, okay, I agree with some of that. And that's not an unusual feeling to me. Like I know I've, you know, I've had this sort of uneasy alliances with other people in other groups, and I don't even feel that uneasy about them anymore. But the fact that it was so publicly like, oh my God, this is an example of how awful Breitbart is. This is an example of how terrible this presidency is, of the people he's surrounding himself with. I was like, wow, okay. And then about 10 days ago, and I haven't even really properly sat with this yet, and I sort of saw it and I put it aside, sort of a little bit, in a little bit of pissed off feeling about it, but I haven't really sat with it properly yet, but I still feel it's significant. I was forwarded an email from somebody who had worked with me on the trailer for the documentary, and she wrote and she said something along the lines of, how is it going with the film, to what somebody else who's working on the film, not me, I got it forwarded to me. How's it going on the film? What are we going to do now that Trump's president and he has Steve Bannon involved, and Breitbart puts out content like this, link to the story itself? What are you going to do about that? How are you going to make sure that we aren't giving them like information or fodder, or you know, how are we going to make sure that that isn't something that is used to their benefit? I think probably there was also like a coin that dropped, or a part of me that just was like, done. I'm just done.
I was expecting you to say, how can we avoid being associated with those people? So, but it was even more kind of extreme than that.
Yes.
Like,
And yeah, it's not, it wasn't like a shockingly new thing to me. Like I'd heard about this before from different groups that they said, but of course this was more of an urgency to it because it's like, this is the, you know, it was, this is the president, you know, and this is the guy they're calling President Bannon, and this is his website, and you know, this is what it is. And yeah, I just felt very, I just could feel like a part of me was just angry, but then a part of me was also just, I'm not do it, I can't do it anymore. I'm not getting into this anymore, you know.
Well, you've been in The Guardian, so I mean, it's revealing the inconsistency of the narrative, isn't it? If they're trying to mock Breitbart for suggesting that the pill, this, that, or the other, and yet the Guardian has also been doing so, then they picked a bad example.
Yes.
But in these liminal times, then it's getting harder and harder to really know what's, well, not, I mean, I guess maybe not for everyone. Hopefully some of us are getting closer to the ground, but generally if you're just trying to take your cues from outside of you in the media, it's getting harder and harder to know what's acceptable as truth and not, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
As opposed to not what's true or false, because it's not about that anymore. It's about what's acceptably true and what's unacceptably true.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought what you said about, you know, moving, you know, where we get so sort of involved in our own just confirmation of what we believe, that we don't have a concept of what is true anymore, really resonated with me. I think that's yeah, exactly. It's like, it's not about what is true and what isn't true. It's about who's saying it, how they're saying it, how it's presented. It's that.
And whether you want to partake of that, whether you want to belong to that group, no, that's,
yes,
that subset of ideology.
Yeah, exactly. And if you take one part of it, does that mean that you have to take the whole thing?
Yeah.
You know, you don't get to just say yes and no. You only get to, it's just one side or the other. And that's it. But
so, I mean, for me, it begs the question, well, many, many questions, of course, but the one that's closest to my lips now, or the tip of my tongue, is like, to what extent are people pretending to believe things? And not, okay, the obvious way I realize would be in terms of they want to belong to one group, so they'll pretend, they'll say the things they think they need to say. That's very obvious. But what also occurs to me is, to what extent are people, let's say the ruling class, because we're running out of time, so I just want to simplify, but, and I wanted to get to the ruling class because we haven't touched on class at all, and I think it's like the elephant in the room, really, in terms of the real club that people want to belong to, but you don't belong to unless you say the right yeses and cross the right threshold. This group who are creating the narratives, to what extent are they pretending to be something they're not, which is right to this original question of being amid the Illuminati in Hollywood, not just to disguise themselves, but also to signal to others to imitate those behaviors. I mean, I touched on this in Pizzagate. So you've got the ruling class who are actually secretly doing these horrendous things, which we don't have to go into because we both know, you know, what they are or may be. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're not going to broadcast it because it's illegal, number one, but also they don't want just everyone else imitating those behaviors, because then it would destabilize the whole culture that they're currently ruling. So then they develop a cloak of behavior and a cloak of beliefs and of values that they probably would be all the more vocal about in terms of putting that aspect, that false cloak forward into the culture as a way to move through the culture and appear to be part of it. And that so many of the values that we're thinking are the right values to have are being propagated by people who don't actually believe in them, I guess is what I'm getting to.
Oh yeah, and I think that's something that I even find myself saying, like, is that, oh, you don't think that he really believes that, like, that, isn't it? But then I remember there was a moment when that was an okay thing to discuss, but then it seemed like it became like, oh, well, saying that is downplaying the danger of him, right? To suggest that he doesn't believe what he's saying. It's like, well, you know, you're just normalizing, or you're just making it more acceptable. Even though I think, you know, why wouldn't that be right?
Right. Well, isn't it also to do with being that question about what has bearing on our sense of ourselves, whatever the phrase was, that biological organs shouldn't have a bearing on who we are, isn't the flip side of that, that what we say and what we say we believe must have a bearing on who we are?
Oh, so I see what you're saying. So if you say...
If you say I'm a woman, even though I have a penis, that has a bearing on who you are. The penis doesn't, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
So then the whole thrust of this is that what we say we are is what we are. So then if you question what people say, then you're questioning the foundations of this new ideology.
Oh, wow, that's absolutely right. And there's some sort of saying that people kept passing around at that time, which was, when someone tells you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
Which I don't know where that came from. It sounds like something Oprah would have said. I think, in fact, it probably was Oprah. But yeah, like, exactly. That if you said something, so when I was sort of sat there going, I don't think he's, you know, and for me it was from the point of view of him being pro-life, because of the kind of people that I end up interacting with, and I was like, well, I don't think he really is. Do you not think he's probably paid for a few abortions in his time? And you know, that's a, you know, that, yeah, but we're meant to take it on face value, because not taking it on face value was not taking it seriously.
Yeah. But
to me, I was taking it seriously to know that there wasn't, that wasn't what was happening, that wasn't, he wasn't representing himself.
Yeah. Yeah, an ability to examine and question and discern. I mean,
isn't that taking it seriously?
So it's flabbergasting when we put it so starkly that people, I'm reluctant to use that term, I guess we or whatever, this phenomena is of people are becoming so infantilized that they are believing anything and everything anyone says. Like in now of all times, you know?
Now, I know. Now they want to believe it, yeah. But it's not that they want to believe it, it's that you have to believe it. Because yeah. Otherwise you're not actually taking part as you should be.
In the narrative that's being presented, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember having this conversation where I was trying to say, well, you know, we were talking about fake news, and you're like, well, this is a good, you know, well, what are we talking about here? Who gets to decide this? And it's always the point of it is always like, yes, but this is such a bad situation that we all have to get behind this story. You know, like you can't be on the sidelines wondering, questioning. Right, you can't be on the sidelines thinking critically. You have to be over here, because it's that dire. It's that dire that you have to be behind this.
Yeah.
I've definitely felt that. I've definitely felt that coming.
Well, that's made me think of what we started with this threshold. Because if you're in a, not even in a group, but if you're in an environment or a community, and there is this agreed upon behavior, and you haven't been inducted into it as yet, but you're there at the threshold, and the group is waiting for you to step over, they won't tolerate you just staying on the threshold, because then you're a potential witness. Mm-hmm. Like if you imagine stumbling into a mafia party or what have you.
Yeah,
you basically
true.
You've got to kill somebody quick, otherwise they're going to kill you.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, we're circling it back to being in Hollywood. The reason I brought that threshold thing up is that I had an experience recently where my husband, actually not me, but was offered something and like a advancement in his career, and he said no, because he didn't like what he was being offered. Like, this was the deal. It was like, it was presented as like, this is the deal. So either you accept this and you get to do this, or you don't and you don't get to do it. And because it was so cut and dry and it was so black and white, it felt very strange. And I said to him at the time, doesn't it feel like they're sort of saying, it's something, it's more than that. Like, it's not just accepting that change to your script or that story or that thing they want to do. It's more, it's bigger than that. And he was like, yeah. I was like, I feel like it's like there's more to it.
Like a
There's more to,
symbolic thing.
yeah, like if you say yes, then that means something. And you've said no, and like emphatically no. Of course, I mean, you can reduce that to like the idea of, oh, well, people are like, well, you know, if you don't say yes and you don't want it enough, right? You're like, well, what is it? You know, at that point, it's like, well, what is it going to be? I don't know. But I think there's another side to it that doesn't reduce it to that, which is where you just sort of stand there and think, well, that feels strange, and then contextualize it and all your interactions with the people involved, and you're like, well, that all felt kind of strange. There were these strange things that were said and strange things that happened, and that was something that I now can see. Now I'm leaning back out of it. Was weird, and uncomfortable. And yeah, then it starts making you think, well, what would have been in that yes? Like, was it really just a contract to make a movie, or was it something else?
Yeah, how strange would it have got if you had actually crossed over
Yeah.
into the source of the strangeness?
And that also links back to, I found what you said about the Pizzagate and hipsters really interesting, seeing as I live in like the nexus of hipsters, Silver Lake. Because of, you were talking about sort of the irony and detachment and everything goes and nothing, you know, the idea of like, oh, we're all just messing around and playing and it's all just a joke, right? Really interesting because it reminds me, first of all, of that Chris Morris show, Nathan Barley, and how they would take like everything to the absurd level, where it was like just very, well, it was kind of perverted and weird, but they were so detached that you didn't really think about it. But then also the people that were involved in the situation I'm describing as best I can, because there was definitely that level to it too, where, you know, you'd be like, oh, there's something going on here where you're not behaving as a parent should, or as someone interacting with younger people should, or, you know, where it just felt kind of there's this level of not irresponsibility, it's hard to explain, really. But yeah, it's like the sort of adolescence, or just. Yeah, it's it, I yeah, and you know, there's a couple of things that are really direct as well that I was just like, yeah, that's I could totally see that being what's going on there. And of course that made me feel like, oh, you know, am I meant to do something? You know, should I say something? Or, you know, do I just say no?
What do you mean by that something going on there?
Well, I mean, like the way that people, you go to parties and things, and you'd be like, "Was, you know, is there some kind of abuse thing going on here? Is there some kind of a greed situation? You know,
Well, you say you, but I've yet to make it into a Hollywood party, so I have to imagine to fill in the gaps there. But
yeah." And you know, this, you know, you are often at these sort of things, and that you're not at them with Brad Pitt, but you're at them with somebody who's, you know, was 8 years old at parties with Walt Disney,
with
or
Walt Disney, so somebody pretty old then.
yeah, exactly. Or you're at them with at parties with somebody who, you know, they're all sort of on the fringes. It's not like I'm going, you know, for the most part, not going to anything where you're seeing people that you'd see as like celebrities and such. But yeah, it makes you wonder when you see the sort of attitudes people have, and you know, the things that they tell you about their friends, and yeah. And it was funny because there was actually a couple who was I knew through somebody that we were quite good friends with, who had adopted children from Haiti.
Oh,
And
gosh.
I was like, okay, Okay, there you go. And like 8-year-old, 9-year-old boys.
Yeah.
So when, yeah, so that wasn't apparent. None of that was apparently odd to me or didn't bring anything up in my mind or make me feel paranoid or make me feel anything until there was this moment where it was like, well, either you say yes or you say no. And I was like, well, this isn't say yes to going to some party where you sacrifice a child, but it's still saying yes to like something that you're not comfortable with. And the yes to that something is you're not comfortable with it because of what it represents and because of the what they want to do, which is, you know, something that you consider to be unnecessarily somehow immoral almost or amoral, right?
Is this, you haven't referred to this, but the actual question, have you? You're keeping it metaphorical or
Well, I'm trying to. I don't know why, really, because it doesn't really matter now. But it was about, you know, I thought it sounds quite mundane, but it was about changing a script. And the only way that it was going to go forward was if this major change was made. And both myself and my husband really felt like that to change it in the way that it did was going to convey something that we were both really uncomfortable with. A message, an idea. It was going to make the film that would result something else.
And is this the same example you just brought up that was more your husband's decision?
Yes,
Oh, okay, right.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it seemed to be around messaging more, rather than an aesthetic choice.
Yeah, it did. It wasn't work. Yeah, it didn't work as an aesthetic choice, which is why it became so frustrating because it was like, well, the only reason that you can be so determined to put this in is like because of some idea that you have about this, and it's just not something he felt comfortable with, and I don't feel comfortable with it.
And was the messaging itself questionable, I mean dubious, or did it ring alarm bells, or was it just the desired message in itself?
Yeah, it did actually, because it was about basically about putting in this idea of being mind controlled and committing violence,
Yeah.
and that was not the original narrative or the original intention, and you know it was yeah, and it was held on to so tightly that it was just really bizarre.
So, and is your husband aware of the kind of broad stroke Illuminati, Hollywood mind control, all of that stuff at all, or what?
That's an interesting question because, yes, I think he is more and more actually. The more he's learnt about the kind of craft of what he does, which is screenwriting, the more he's become aware of it and how it can be used and the kind of narratives that are the normal kind of narratives that are, you know, popular or funded. And yeah, I think so. And then I think, you know, on a kind of one level, he reads a lot of scripts too that haven't become developed or haven't got, don't get developed or haven't been developed and produced. And so, sort of seeing the way that people reflect their feelings in those as well, about. You know, not just like about groups of people like women, for example, but also about how like there's always certain themes too. So like for 1 year, everybody will be writing about one particular thing, or there'll be a large proportion of people writing about one particular theme. And then the next year, there'll be a large proportion of people writing about another particular theme. And it's almost like a barometer. And they write it into their scripts. And then sometimes, which is the really freakiest, he'll come off along something and he'll actually feel like he needs to kind of flag it for whatever, not to like the police, but to whoever he's reading it for, and be like, whoever wrote this, I think might, you know, not just be writing scripts about this. There might be something deeper to it, you know, like this felt like they were trying to get something out. They wanted to write about this as a confession almost.
All right.
Yeah. So that's
So, yeah.
interesting too. But obviously he doesn't like, it's not like, oh well, you know, let's hunt this person down. It's more like this has got a different tone to it, you know. So yeah, I think he's aware of it more now than maybe 7 years ago when we came here first. But that's what happens, right? Like you go from being like a movie fan to being someone on, however much on the inside that you are, even at this point that we are, that you see the mechanics of it. And for him, that's how it's worked out. And for me, it's like I often find myself like, and I wondered because in the last year we've seen films, we've gone to see films, and we haven't enjoyed a lot of them. And I don't know whether that's because the films are particularly bad or because we're becoming incapable of enjoying them. And so, like for example, I can think the last film we watched together was Arrival.
Yeah, we watched that, so.
Yeah, and I felt myself the whole time, and I told my husband this. I felt myself like the whole time being like, "What do they want me to learn from this?" And I couldn't get that question out of my head to the point that at what I think about a third or halfway through, I felt kind of panicky, because I was like, "Oh, I don't like what they want me to learn from this, right?" And then I had to, and I felt quite physically panicked by it, which was really interesting. So yeah, though it's going from sort of that crossing the line of going from like a complete consumer and fan and then coming into it, like it does, yeah, once you learn the mechanics and the, you know, the people and the even the, you know, the who the people are behind it, and how things get made and how the sausage gets made, isn't that what they say?
Haven't read Seen and Not Seen, I guess.
Yes, I have, of
Oh, you
course.
have?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I
I
loved
was
it.
going to
Yeah.
recommend it, but
No,
never mind.
I've loved it. I read it. Oh, it must have been 2 years ago or so now. Still
Okay.
have it somewhere.
Because we're zero book sorters. Yeah, I forgot that. Right. Okay. Has your husband read it?
No, I ended up reading a lot of parts of it to him, and I did talk to him a lot about it at the time.
And did you move to Hollywood because he was there?
No, we moved
No,
together.
you agreed to move together.
Yes, we
Right.
did. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking that, my view of Hollywood, not based on direct experience, but just more and more clues and leads and what have you, that it's kind of like, it was almost like moving to Hollywood would be the equivalent of living in Langley. As far as like just how
Well,
heavy it
LA's a
must
lot
be.
bigger than Langley,
Well,
though.
that's true, but Hollywood isn't. Do you actually live in Hollywood?
I live in East Hollywood.
Right.
I don't live where all the people live. I'm probably a good 30-minute walk from where they all live,
Yeah, it's
for the
true. It's a
most
big
part.
city and it's car bound and all the rest of it. So, maybe not such a dense population of spooks, but still, there's that sense that maybe Hollywood really was a town and an industry that was created by spooks and for spooks and of spooks, for a social engineering propaganda program. And you could, but unlike Langley, you could enter into it aspiring to something with no clue about what it would take to actually achieve what you're aspiring to, and what it would be being used, in service to, and what the behaviors are concealed beneath the glamour of Hollywood. I'm not saying that this is the case. That's why I said, the broad stroke Hollywood Illuminati stuff. I don't read that stuff, but obviously I'm aware of how more and more popular it is, more and more YouTubes about this, that, and the other. And so many people believe this about Hollywood, that it is just this satanic clique, really. I don't go that far. I don't rule it out either, but the whole thing is just very. It sparks a lot of curiosity for me. I mean, even without my personal Hollywood fixation, which I pretty much cured myself of, just this idea of being in an environment and not knowing if it's what it seems and if people are what they're representing themselves as.
Well, that yeah, that's definitely something I experience on a daily basis, is that people aren't what they present themselves as. Yeah, there's no, I mean, even just people who these aren't people who have particular status in the industry, but yeah, there is, it's permutated with the idea. I mean, the act as it's massive loads of actors, they're acting. They don't know anything else. I often have said before, like, I don't know who, you never know who really likes you and who doesn't. So you just never quite know if they actually like you or not. And everything, all interaction becomes super exaggerated, because like, to actually convey liking and enjoying someone's company, you have to really go over the top, because the base level is so is just makes everything seem meaningless. And it, oh, the other thing I find very interesting here is that you often go to places or interact with people, and say you meet someone and they introduce you to the rest of their friends, and these people are supposedly the sort of, they're great friends, they're close friends, and they act like they don't even know each other, and they don't have, seem to have any emotional closeness or any kind of history or real understanding of each other at all, which I've always found very confusing. But I just really rely on my instinct a lot with people here, and usually it pays off pretty well. I tend to feel quite like I know early on, where someone's coming from in a way. But yeah, it's an, I mean, it's an odd place, and one of the odd things about it is you sort of, even on the fringes of it, you meet people. Like my a friend of mine became friends with Corey Feldman. The weekend after, I'd had a whole conversation with her about who she thought was the person who supposedly abused him when he was a child. And she's quite open to talking about these things. A lot of people aren't, but we were talking about it, and she's like, we were saying, actually, met her and her husband, and they were saying, well, you have to wonder who, sometimes when you get really famous, who you are indebted to. And why do you keep doing the things that you keep doing? Why do people keep making crappy movies? Why do people keep touring? Why are they doing it? Are they doing it because they want to? Are they doing it because they have to? So we're having this whole conversation about sort of the idea of debt and blackmail, and then like within a week or 10 days, and she, you know, that's what it's like. Like it's all, you know, it's very present. And
Within a
that,
week or 10 days, what? Sorry.
she'd met Corey Feldman and hung out with him and was texting him, you know. So,
So, but what was the correlation between you talking about it and her meeting him?
there wasn't, ostensibly, there wasn't a correlation. It was just a serendipitous
Yeah.
that we were talking about him and then she met him.
But what do you think it means?
What do I think it means?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Yeah, that's why I think why I said that, why I made the connection between the timing.
Yeah.
The timing was very strange because we'd sort of, you know, in quite bad taste, I suppose, said, you know, who do you think it would be? And you know, I said, oh, I think I can't remember who I said now, and they all had their ideas, and you know, and then obviously, I found that out, and I was like, well, did you ask him about it? And she's like, no, I didn't ask him about it. But yeah, so.
So, and is this something that does come up in conversation with the people that you know in Hollywood? Like it is a topic, a common topic.
Yeah, yeah, I think it does, but whether that's because I'm there, I
Right.
don't know. That would be hard for me to know whether they talk about it of their own accord.
Sure.
I don't know, but
But
I.
it's not like taking a shit in a punch bowl. Like when you bring it out, the circles that you move in, it's perfectly fine for you to bring up organized pedophilia in Hollywood.
Yeah, and in the reaction to it is you like there's two sort of reactions I can think of to it, which is one, which is like trying to figure out like from their own experience how that would work, and then realizing that it could work, like it could be something that could happen. And then the other side of it is people who kind of joke about it, you know, like oh, that's what people say is going on, you know, that's what they think that's going on. And I suppose there's a way, in the same way with the Illuminati narrative, that if you're in it, even to a small extent, you know, and to have been here and moved here and lived here, people still feel quite like, oh, well, I've done that in itself is a achievement to them. Then they're quite protective of it, and so they see that as just like either and anti-Hollywood feeling, like and like people see sort of an anti-intellectual middle America, or they see it as kind of like a moralistic thing, like this hearkening back to the idea of Hollywood being this bed of sin, which kind of was and has been, and whatever you want to call that, you know, like the idea of the old stories that we hear about. Oh, I'm trying to think of the very famous one that brought in the Hays Code, and I can't think of it now. And
Oh, the Arbuckle, wasn't it?
Arbuckle,
Yeah.
exactly. Arbuckle. And also I think there's another level of it that people think, oh, it's just jealousy because they're not here, right? So they have to denigrate it and bring it down so that they can feel like, well, I wouldn't want to be doing that anyway, right?
Right. But not people who kind of take it as a point of pride of. Yeah, we're movie stars and we're the Illuminati.
Well, I think that started when Beyoncé had that lyric in one of her songs on her last album and performed it at the Super Bowl, where she acknowledged that people think she's Illuminati. And I think that was purposeful, right? Because what better way than to just say it at the Super Bowl?
Right.
Which I thought was really interesting. But yeah, I mean. Yeah, I mean, I've joked with friends about it, you know, before in different contexts where you're like, oh, so, you know, how much, oh, I said to my friend, oh, I think something had happened, and I said to her, oh, you know, next time I see you, you'll be in the Illuminati, and she said, well, how much does it pay? So, you know, it's kind of that too. It's a bit of a bad taste joke as well.
Right.
Because obviously everybody is here striving, right? And they always do have the question of not so much like, what am I capable of? Am I capable of doing the kind of things we associate with the Illuminati? But on the even on the level of, what am I capable of? Am I capable of just doing this thing that makes me uncomfortable, or doing this thing I don't like, or doing this thing that doesn't align with how I want to present myself? Or do you see what I mean? So like that people are very much encouraged, I think, to say yes to everything that they are given or offered, because they're lucky.
There's a very wide spectrum there in terms of yeses, a yes spectrum, as we were touching on earlier. But then there's also the thing of look. A willingness to look the other way, knowing that one could sabotage or would sabotage one's career or one's attempt to have a career if one were to challenge or confront or expose something that one did become aware of. You see what I mean? I mean that's in any community anyway. Nobody wants to be a snitch or be seen as, and the basic risk of being a whistleblower, even if it's on a very local scale, even if it's within a family. You know, the messenger often gets killed, so to speak. No one wants to be the messenger of bad news anyway, never mind if it's going to ruin your career. So, yeah, it's.
Well, that's what I was going to talk to you about last time we spoke, actually. I remember now that the film that my husband has recently made is, which we'll get. I have to send you it, but I don't think he has the DVDs yet. But he's that is about the idea of like, how far will you go? And now this was without us talking about this openly, with he wrote it with the director. But interestingly, what ended up coming out of it was a film that's very much about like, what bargains do you make and who wins, how far will you take it, and what do you have to do to maintain it, once you get that status, once you get to the point that you've wanted to get to as an actress, as an actor, which I think. It's interesting was that ended up, that's the feature of our time here in the last 7 years that ended up coming out of that. Isn't that
That's
funny, of all things? And he's not even that deeply involved in this. Like, we don't talk about this all the time, and but that's what came out.
Yeah.
And it's quite, it's sort of dark look at that. And it came out of, I think, quite pedestrian experiences of just feeling like, the push and pull of like what you're willing to put up with.
Yeah, that's what I was getting a sense of, really, was the acclimatization. You get acclimatized to making decisions in that particular context. Then the decisions can just get bigger and bigger and graver, and the compromises along with that.
So it's exactly what his film ended up being about. That's the narrative of the film, which is, as somebody who was a would be self-confessed like movie fan, as is the director, real like, knowing everything about everything, knowing what a movie is within the first 3 seconds of the movie, like that level of involvement in it. And then for that's what comes out the other side after, what, I guess six years of, no, it would have been 4 years of being here. So
It's not called Moral Hazard, is it?
no.
I just thought that would be a great title because I just wanted to bring up Moral Hazard because that's also what we're talking about now.
Oh, say that again. What is it?
Moral Hazard.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not called that, but that's good.
I think it's to do more with corporations, but just generally when you're in a climate in which people are committing unethical acts on a daily basis and a regular basis, and it's simply the done thing. Because of what we're talking about a lot today, this desire not to be seen as an outsider, not to be pushed out of the group, the desire to fit in, it's this constant source of temptation to imitate those behaviors that we're surrounded by. That's moral hazard.
Yeah, no, they actually originally it was called Day for Night, but now it's called Los Angeles Overnight, which is just like a play on the idea of overnight success
Right.
and what that means.
Right.
You know, how that in a sense is like we were saying about blank slate wiping away history. People just, you say you're overnight success and nobody really thinks about where you came from.
Yeah, right. That's the dream. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're all, they're all, well, we say we, I wasn't here for it, I accidentally stepped into it, but that's what they're all here for anyway.
Yeah, and you didn't have the dream to be a Hollywood star, I take it. Yeah.
No,
Because,
I couldn't be further from the truth.
right, because I did, of course. I mean, all of this is very, very close to the quick of something, especially seeing as I wrote a script about Hollywood secret society corruption and stuff too. So I'm thinking, I'm going to send you my script.
Yeah,
Hey,
yeah.
I know someone in Hollywood.
You
Will you
should. My
read my
husband will
script?
read it. He
Yeah.
loves reading scripts.
Right, well, I absolutely will now, but it's just so funny how all these different things have converged because I really forgotten all about that. But and I mean about my desire to make it as a script writer in Hollywood. Yeah, and how, I mean, you've read Seen and Not Seen, the journey of the arc of discovery about the truth about my own the ways in which I'd been seduced by Hollywood, recognizing that congruent with recognizing what Hollywood is, maybe was enough to pretty much break the spell at this
Yeah,
point.
that's so sorry. I just
Yeah.
went off on sort of a reverie, weird feeling there because I just remembered. I can't remember the film, but my husband only last week said something like, "Oh, I've always been drawn to this actor because I always feel like he looks like my dad." And he said it completely without any other context. I'll have to ask him what the actor was and what the film was. I can't remember now. But yes, of course, I read the Seen or Not Seen, and yeah, and the breaking the, yeah, I know. I think the guy has some the thing. It's my husband has a similar thing to me. Is that it's just this drawn to it, you know, drawn to engaging in the media and thinking you can, you know, that you can sort of like for me, it's like, oh, I can engage with it in a critical way,
Yeah.
and I can in that sense keep control.
Yeah.
But like I said, like I realised the limits of that. I think. Especially that was a, I think the election was just a dark reminder.
Right. Right, bringing back to that. It's a reality TV show that has taken over reality. Which is
Yes.
what people want. Essentially, they got what they wanted.
Yes, which is funny that he used the Rolling Stones song, "You Can't Always Get What You Want," as his
Oh.
song for election night, isn't it? I was only thinking that last night.
Huh, I didn't know
Yeah, he played the first song he played when he came out and accepted. I didn't watch it. I heard about the second hand just as I was saying to you. Second hand. But you can't always get what you want, but if you try, you get what you need.
that. It was probably a toss-up between that and Sympathy for the Devil.
Yes.
Pleased to meet you.
Yes, probably was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny though, I think that I know that, but I know that secondhand because I didn't watch it.
Yeah, right. Again, so you can't be sure it's true even.
No, just it's a good story though.
Yeah.
I like it. It fits with my outlook, so I'll keep that one.
Well, unless I Google it and then I might have to burst your bubble.
Oh no.